My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Tonight we have a double treat. First off, we are joined as all, well, not as always, but as often as we can by Daniel Dowdy, host of the redoubtable Thronderdome and Cannonball podcast. And to celebrate our first old time radio episode of the new year and our first old time radio episode in a very long time, I got very lazy and said, fuck it, let's just do the best episode of old time radio there ever was. So we're covering The Thing on the Forrible Board, which is a very famous episode of Quiet Please. So first, Dan, you know, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, hey, I'm always thrilled to be here. And yeah, this one was I'm going to call it a corker.
Oh yeah,
this was something.
Yeah. So a little bit of background on this series, just very light. First of all, go get this series. They are all incredible stuff. So people have actually put in the effort to like go in and de-static them and help the sound quality a bit. Although I think the old static recordings have a lot of charm too, because they up the creep factor. The main gag on this is that they are all written by a single man called Willis Cooper, and all of them are narrated by a man called Ernest Chappell, who, well, based on these, was a hell of an actor, but mostly did work as a radio announcer. And they almost all take the form of him, like, sort of calmly and laconically telling you a story that, like, of something that gets evil and wrong, with minimal sound effects and a sparse other cast otherwise. And they also have apparently they have an impressive organ score, but apparently it was just one guy doing it, not a full-on orchestra, so they had to be a lot more inventive with the sound design. Again, just check them all out. They're incredible. I'll have a link to a website with all of them in the show notes. And this one is very special because it's widely held up as the like crowning jewel of the series and the best of the first wave of old time radio. So yeah, let's go around and what everyone think. Rahul, I think you're going to have the weirdest opinion. So why don't you go first?
Weird that you would say that.
yeah, Rahul's never done anything weird in his life.
Ronald.
I was defending you, bro.
Look, Rahul is not on trial here. All right, this is...
the system is on trial.
Google jury nullification. All right.
Oh fuck! That reminds me of my jury duty next week. God damn it!
Oh, no. Here's a pro tip: mention jury nullification. You will not get on that jury.
Damn it! I already submitted the questionnaire. Anyway, this was a fantastic episode. It was actually, I don't deserve an episode this good. I'll say that. Fantastic. I recommend it.
Ronald, what did you think?
Oh man, this is easily the best episode of radio we've listened to on this show. Just incredible. From the voice acting to the creep factor to just the story itself. This is just a really, really solid episode.
Oh, and Ronald didn't mention the number of pork chops the man ate, which is
it was an impressive amount of pork chops in this episode.
Yeah, and finally, I'll go next. I stand by it. This is one of the best, if not the best, episode of old time radio I've ever heard. I think maybe some episodes of Fear on Four can touch it, and there's one episode of Suspense, but you know, it's sort of like it's very hard to rank like those between them, because it's sort of like ranking, you know, God or something. Yeah, just fantastic, creepy. I've heard this like 6 or 7 stuff and times, and I was still getting creeped out this morning. Yeah. And Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, it's a strong recommend from me. And I would definitely, like, if any of y'all out there appreciate our opinions, go and listen before we spoil it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just really... this really shows what the medium of like radio of audio was capable of. It's just a perfect lineup of script and acting and just the right touch with sound effects. It was really, really cool. Just a very affecting and hair raising listen.
Yeah. Okay. And with that out of the way, I'm going to roll for the summary. Is there anyone who doesn't want to be included? Meh, we love our stony silence. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Oh, it's me. Okay. So this opens.
I'll time you.
Yeah. Okay. Give me a minute on the clock.
All right. 1 minute on the clock. Go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
Okay, so we open with a man named Porky who is telling us a story. You are in his house, apparently. He mentions that his wife is in another room and a bit hard of hearing. And then he flashes back to his work as a roughneck on an oil field. He is alone at an oil derrick, everyone else having gone into town, and is approached by a geologist who wants to come look at the cores. They talk some about how eerie it is and hear some strange noises. And then the geologist goes to look up at the cores. And inside the core, he finds a ring that cannot possibly be there because it is from strata of Earth that are millions and millions of years old. And also a finger that appears to be made out of stone, but when they rub it off, it actually turns out to be invisible but feel like stone. Then they go down and go to sleep because they're like, what can we possibly do? Then the man, Porky, awakens to find that the geologist has fallen off the oil rig and died. There's an inquest, the police investigate, but there's not that much they can do. So oil drilling resumes, and the man goes up to do some bit of business and sees a cable being broken by an invisible force and fall to the ground, crushing another man, or like the block it was holding up crushes him. After this, the oil well is just abandoned, and as far as he knows, it's still there. But he is determined to find out the mystery of what has happened, so he goes back one last time. He is confronted by some invisible force or other that's like appears to be coming after him. He tries to shoot it to no avail, and he thinks he's about to die, but in desperation, he picks up a bottle or a can of paint and throws it at the thing, whereupon it is revealed to be a thing that has the face of a little girl, the hands of a human, one of which is missing a finger, and the body of something like a spider, which the man has previously mentioned he is afraid of. And then the episode takes a very weird turn where it is revealed that the reason he is telling you this story is that he has wedded the monster that he found up top and intends to feed you to it. And yeah, it's really fucking something.
Yeah. Yeah, you went well over, but this episode deserved it.
Yeah. How long over, just out of curiosity?
About 50 seconds.
Jesus Christ, I am bad at this.
No, I'm
that's okay. That was a very good summary.
That was a very good and very tight synopsis, Lawrence. You should not feel any shame.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go around for some high points. I think these are going to be weirdly kind of quick just because, I mean, it's sort of everything. But yeah, what did people like about this episode?
Well, I have one I'm going to say right off the top. So beginning listening to it, my first thought on hearing that there was like an oil derrick, they're talking to geologists, they're mentioning millions of years ago, I was thinking, oh, there's going to be some sort of like prehistoric ghoulie they dig up. And that's why Lawrence wanted me on for this, because I'm, you know, Mr. Extinct Animals guy, and I love that stuff. So I'd be able to like give a little context, or like, here's why this is funny that they said that or whatever. So to say that I was zagged is a real understatement. I was zagged so hard by this one. And as I was being zagged, I was being creeped out more than any of these I've listened to so far. But yeah, so I really appreciated just what a really weird direction it went in with its, you know, monster from millions of years ago conceit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I guess at least monster from strata of Earth that are from millions of years ago. You know, these creatures, you know, they seem to be like exist in a matrix of mineral, I guess. So, you know, who knows what their deal is.
There is no attempt whatsoever to explain what the fuck these things are, which
is kind of makes it so much better. Yeah.
Yeah. Because any explanation would be stupid. The one thing that I found sort of charming was that apparently they're mute and they're blind except when you can see them, which is, I mean, episode doesn't do anything with that, but that's still pretty creepy because they're naturally invisible.
Well, it does something in that he's like, oh, I have to put makeup on her.
Yeah.
To take her out into the world. Like you can hide the body well enough with dresses, he said, but he has to put makeup on her face to like at least have her out in public.
Yeah. Which brings me to another high point, which is that this is astonishingly perverse even for now. And I'm astonished that this made it on the radio in the 40s.
So I was going to ask if like when it aired, so it was in the 1940s.
Yeah. Wow. It was kind of towards the end of the old time radio boom. And this would have also been happening at the height of World War II, I believe. So that might explain some of it.
The audio quality is pretty good for how old it is.
Well, it's being cleaned up if you, depending on which version you sent. But the old ones are still pretty good. These survive because these are Ernest Chappell's personal, or Willis Cooper's personal recordings of them, essentially. But anyway, so the reason it's perverse is essentially, first off, he says that her name is Maxine, but people like to call her Max or something, I believe.
Mike.
Yeah, which implies some kind of homosexual thing, which not scandalous at all to today's, but would have been mind-blowing for a person in the 40s, you know. And then she's got the face of a little girl and the body of a spider. So we're at minimum dealing with also pedophilia and bestiality.
Right.
And it's not like I decided to take care of it or anything. He specifically has said that this thing is his wife.
Yeah.
So
does bestiality cover insects?
I mean, it doesn't, because it's impossible to do that. But it would if it were, you know.
If an insect of adequate size. Now let's see what we can do with one of those African Goliath beetles.
let's go back in time to when there were those worms the size of a truck or whatever. Let's see who gets horny.
Those millipedes the size of a surfboard. Let's see. Hey, baby.
It'd probably fucking eat you.
Well, yeah, but then you're just getting a devour, and maybe you'll get a luck out and get the rare beast.
That's where I get my nut off, dude. Don't shame me.
I'm sorry for accidentally shaming you.
You've unlocked something really dark for this episode.
Yeah, you invite me on here just to yuck my yum? Come on now. I'm sorry, yuck, I hate that yum. Phrase. I hate that phrase so much.
It is disgusting.
Like, it's really good.
It's almost gross, but I can't tell you why.
It's gross because it's infantilizing, like, sexual kink.
Yes.
It's talking about sexual kink the way people talk about like Pixar movies.
Oh yeah. So,
like, yeah, anyway, something I really liked was he did a fantastic job of the roughneck talk, like describing the Derek and making you feel like he had actual experience doing oil stuff.
Yeah, no, it was really good, and I kept
really good job setting all that up and not being like overbearing about it, but you know,
totally. And enough. I thought when I was first listening to it, I thought it was going to be like there's some technical detail that we're going to have to pay attention to like, you know, for whatever was going on. And it didn't end up mattering. It was just some nice world building.
Yeah, one thing that these have is that he was frequently drawing from his the writer Willis Cooper was frequently drawing from jobs he'd had in the past. So he actually was an oil roughneck for a while. Oh. And these have a lot of these episodes have kind of a fascination with process or just people doing unusual jobs. So there's one called Tap the Heat Bogdan that is largely about working in a smelter, and then has a weird twist on it, of course, because it's a horror thing. But still. Right. So a lot of these will quite frequently start with someone just sort of describing their job to you. And it's done well enough that it's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I followed all the technical talk, but it's not like it mattered. It was just,
I didn't either. Cause there was like a point. Yeah, where I was like, man, I don't really fully what's going on.
Doing something, but yeah. I got, there was something above that was heavy, you know, like
I was just thrilled to find out what the hell the word forble meant.
Yeah, that was
but I guess we should say for the listeners, the usage is in roughneck parlance. You have these lengths of pipe that go down, you know, as it drills down, you insert more lengths into the derrick as it goes down. So you'll have the single length, the double length, the triple length, and the forble length. So I guess that's a little bit of a portmanteau of the trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of inside baseball on that
on old timey oil derrick tech.
Yeah. I got another high point. The freaking noise that the monster makes is really creepy. It's like somewhere, and they even kind of describe it this way, somewhere between like a baby crying and a cat meowing. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it was just kind of like infantile enough to sound like a human child, but also really not.
Yeah, right. It was like just wrong enough to be like that uncanny valley effect where you're like, oh my God, something is horribly wrong here. And it's weird because I think like the episode kind of dips into the like, oh, this is like an innocent thing that we pulled up. And so you kind of pity it. And at the same time, you're terrified of it. It, I don't know. It does a really good job. It's a very horrifying monster.
Yeah. They specifically compare it to like a little kid that's lost. And the fact that it can't see most of the time must make things even more terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deaf. So it, although we don't all entirely know what senses it has, because on the other hand, it's invisible, like spider monster from under the earth made out of stone. So
was it fully, I thought it was only mostly deaf. Like,
yes, yeah, so like, they describe her as hard of hearing. So I think there's like, if you shout loud enough, or maybe there's certain frequencies it can actually hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Mike, I got a visitor for you. And then it comes in. That's yeah. what I'm imagining.
You'd think he would have figured out how to feed him, feed it not humans by now.
Maybe that's all it can eat. Yeah. No, no, no. Like, the only way it can eat is you got to bring it to your, you got to bring someone to your house. You got to season them by telling them a weird, terrifying story about how you met the monster. And then the monster can come out and eat them. That's the only way it can eat.
And you yeah. have to do it live too. Like you can't kill them with a bullet. Like human, like be humanitarian.
No, no, it has to be right. It has to be fed right to it. Yeah.
You know, remember in Resident Evil 1 where that that church guy, he's got his like wife up there, and he's like, it's been like oh, yeah. one day. It's been like a day since the zombification.
Yeah,
he's
she's
already
probably,
like chopped up somebody's feet.
Yeah, she probably wasn't even hungry, really. Like I could go a day without eating if the alternative was murder.
It's like, bro, like you're already feeding the zombies. Like, that's what this is.
I want to double back to the noises. So that leads to one of my favorite things in the episode, which is they're doing the credits at the end where Ernest Chappell is just listing everyone who was in the episode and who they played. And then at the end, he goes, and Cecil Roy was also a member of the cast because she's the one who did the monster noises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
like
cool.
That.
Oh, I stopped listening before that.
Fair enough. Anyways, anyone else got any parting high points? I will say even before the monster shows up, when it's just two guys on an, you know, in an isolated area hearing weird inexplicable noises, like that's a very stock horror setup, but this thing does a really good job with it.
Yeah, it, I think they also did a really good job of like the just the interaction between Porky, who loves his pork chops, and
that is hilarious that that's his name.
Yeah,
it's very possible that's
that
how he got that nickname.
I thought it was just a nickname because he ate so many goddamn
I would think it would have to be because he's eating all these pork. Now, yeah. I'm assuming these must be those like thin sliced pork chops you can get.
Yeah, maybe
you know,
it meant something different back then. Because no way you could eat that much.
Maybe
no
that's what
way.
Pieces of bacon were called back then.
Well, maybe he got hit. He on his first day at work, he met the roughneck equivalent of Andy Bernard and made the mistake of eating a pork chop in front of him.
He's just forever that makes sense. But no, I really appreciated like the camaraderie between Porky and the geologist, you know, character
Billy,
who he called
Billy,
up to take a look at the core.
Yeah, it's
Billy,
Billy,
I think so. Yeah.
Billy Grunwald.
Yeah. And speaking to that, like I think a lot of these episodes, I feel like, you know, if you listen to our archives, probably like 90% of the old time radio episodes, my complaint is like they could have cut like 10 minutes out of this.
Yeah.
This was 23 minutes long. I would have listened to like an hour long episode on this.
They really could have expanded on it. I think you're right. But that also, I just have that much more appreciation for just how tight
yeah.
they made it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was super tight. Felt great. But like, yeah, just like you guys were saying, like just the start, but the little dialogue between Porky and Billy was just so interesting. And like that really didn't even have that much to do with the horror aspect of the episode. Mm-hmm. But like I would just listen to them like, you know, discovering weird stuff in the core for like 30 minutes. Like that was a really cool part of the episode.
Like yeah. I knew it was a horror show. So I kept expecting because he was like when Billy came, he was like, yeah, I've had like four blowouts. I expected there to be like some subterranean monster or something.
He's being haunted by this vengeful spirit of tires.
Because he was like, I hate the dark, you know, all this stuff. So yeah. I was like, maybe he knows something. Because he was like, he was like really interested in the core for some reason.
Well, because he's a geologist.
Yeah, he's a big old nerd. And I thought that was really cool that they made a kind of like a kind of an aside about like the nature of geology. And he was talking a little bit about like, yeah, these cores are great because you get to see like, you know, it's like taking a snapshot all the way down through, and because you can always like, we can make our maps and everything, but there's always just something strange gonna crop up. And this is one way you can find something like that. So I thought it was pretty cool. He was like, you know, sort of demonstrating this guy's like real kind of love of his professional kind of topic, you know?
Yeah, totally. And another thing I really liked that Billy kind of did was he kept being like, well, there shouldn't be water there. And I think I feel like I see this trope a lot in movies where like some scientist is like, you know, like that shouldn't be there. There's something wrong. And like everyone kind of feeds into it. And in this, the guy's like, well, it is there. And then they're like, yeah, that's a good point. I guess I just had to figure out what that means. And
yeah.
Because that's like really how you would, I mean, don't expect. And then you'd be like, I need to incorporate that into my understanding rather than, you know, denying the reality.
Start ranting about how this can't be and it's a sin against his perfect geology.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, I think this next section is going to be kind of shorter, but does anyone have a low point? I was going to say I thought the monster noises were a little bit silly having listened to them a bunch, but I can also understand why other people think they're freaky. So it's not like, oh my, you know.
It rides the line because it's like a cat mewing or, you know, somebody doing that.
I guess the closest thing I would have to a low point would be I didn't quite grasp the motivation behind enwifening this creature.
Well, I mean, not to get too dark, but I thought about this some too. And I mean, there's a pretty big time jump there, so we're not sure. But my explanation for it is that this guy essentially just discovered that he's a pedophile.
Right, yeah.
Or maybe, actually maybe not even a pedophile, something more perverse than that.
Right, like, it has this allure that, yeah. But I mean, even so, like, even without that kind of, like, I mean, it works better without that explanation. I mean, because like you said, Lawrence, like, a lot of times, and I think this might be the dividing line between horror and science fiction, is if an explanation for the thing would just be stupid. I mean, it often is in science fiction, but it's not, you know, but the in horror you can get away with not explaining it, you know.
Horror can draw power from the lack of explanation. In science fiction, unless you're specifically doing a kind of world building where you're trying to just show that the world is very lived in and big, a lack of explanation is usually annoying to the reader, especially if it's a lack of explanation about the central conceit of the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily like take it as dark as Lawrence did. I kind of assumed that he was kind of had a rescue complex for the monster. He like pitied it and took it home. And I mean, yes, he definitely mentions that it's his wife, but I don't know. I kind of thought that was more like a companionship thing than it was like necessarily sexual, but I can obviously see the interpretation.
He could just be saying
it's a pretty weird, dark thing
to entice the person to stay or whatever.
Yeah, there's something very weird going on here. It doesn't, the sexual explanation is kind of the most immediately comprehensible, but that doesn't mean it's the correct one. And the point is, you don't know. This guy's just gone crazy for some reason.
Yeah, it's like he encountered some weird, you know, not subterranean horror, and it broke his understanding of like what living meant.
Oh, wait, I just had a huge realization. So at the very end, he was like, yeah, and then something threw something at my feet, and it was a ring. Maybe that was a marriage proposal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason she killed... Boom. I didn't mention this in the summary, but when Billy Grunwald dies, he's missing a hand because he was wearing the ring, which is a weird decision on its face, and it just ripped his hand off. So maybe she was rejecting Billy Grunwald as a match, but thought that I don't like this.
Porky, he likes pork chops. I like pork chops.
I mean, I like man chops, but they don't call it long pig for nothing.
Oh god.
Maybe was he wearing the ring in the end, or was she?
They don't say. The ring on its own is immensely like disquieting. It's not like actively scary, but this artifact cannot possibly be there, and this like relic of an intensely alien civilization showing up in a place where it should not be is just like, you know,
Very cool hook. More,
yeah. It's way scarier than if they're just being like a rotting corpse or something, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It has to have some sort of be able to do something, unless it's like a rotting corpse with a virus or something.
Yeah. It is very funny that Billy just puts it on. He like doesn't even know what the material is or like, you know, what the value of it as a historical artifact.
Right.
So yeah. That's true.
But they drink a pint together, yeah. Which Porky later claims isn't enough to get him drunk. And it's like, Porky, you got a lot of problems.
Well, they were drinking moonshine, right? It might not have been super strong.
He says that it's bathtub gin. I'm not sure the potency on that either way, but still, I mean, half a pint will fuck you
quite
up a little.
Quite a bit of gin, if it's anywhere comparable to that.
Yeah,
in fact, I think
pass out. So
bathtub gin is actually generally stronger than the other stuff. Anyways, yeah, I don't really got a. No more low points on this. It's just this sort of beautiful eruption of irrationality that's like laid out very painstakingly and then has a hell of a weird twist.
Yeah, for sure. It was a good one. It was a doozy.
Yeah. Anyways, anyone got any parting shots? If not, I believe Ronald has a game for us.
No, man, I think we covered, we all gushed appropriately and urged the listeners to go check it out. Yeah.
I've been gushing.
Yeah, I'm really sad.
gushing like an oil derrick out here.
I'm really sad for anyone who listened to this episode and did not listen to the radio episode first. Because it's so good.
Eight or so people. Hopefully they're not bots.
I think it's mostly me and Lawrence. So.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, Ronald only listens when he's doing QC, so he doesn't even count as a listener.
Nah, I sometimes listen on Spotify. If you see Spotify listens, it's probably from me.
Yeah.
Where do you think the dude got the idea for this?
I have no idea. A lot of these, it's just kind of, wow.
I don't think I've ever had a dream about marrying possibly fake marrying a spider monster baby girl and feeding her
people. Yeah, you're too busy dreaming about normal things like killer biscotti.
Well, see, now I want to make a radio show out of the last really good dream I had, which was that I was attending a show. It was a Dio concert. I think this was shortly after Ronnie James Dio died, but I was attending a Dio concert at a ruined castle in Ireland, and the stage was set up so that all the band members were wearing all black, like theater techs. And behind them were dragon puppets holding like giant versions of their instruments that were puppeteered to look like they were playing the songs.
That rules.
It was the coolest dream I've ever had.
That is awesome. Anyways,
sure that was a dream.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a vision. I have to make this happen.
The afterlife. It
was like you a have psychic. To raise Ronnie James Dio from the dead.
Trying to talk to you.
Anyways,
Ronnie,
I got
the perfect thing for you. Puppets.
I have some great news for you, Raul. There is actually Willis Cooper, the author of this episode, has actually written an answer to where do you get your ideas in the form of an episode of Quiet Please called Where Do You Get Your Ideas, where Willis Cooper is the main character and explains where he gets his ideas.
Does it turn into a veer into horror?
Yes, because it's an episode of Quiet Please. Also, I take it back. These were airing in 49, so they were not at the height of World War II.
Sure. But still, I mean, that's still like, this is way gnarlier than I would have thought for 49.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, okay, let's get into the game then.
All right. You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
The game is very much themed for today's episode. Actually, Lawrence kind of came up with this, but I'll still be running it.
Yeah, I'm the ideas guy. Ronald went in and actually did the thing.
Yeah. All right. The game is called Fuck, Marry, Kill with Random Chimeras. Okay. I have 16 things in a list, and I will be rolling a die. The first roll will determine what the head of the creature is. The second roll will determine what the body of it is. And the third roll will determine what the legs are. And then once I create your chimera, you have to decide if you're going to fuck, marry, or kill it.
Okay. Right. Hit me.
Okay, Lawrence, you want to go first?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me do some die rolling here. Okay.
Dog.
First is the head, and you get spider.
Oh, great.
Okay, second is the body, and you get Martian. And third is the legs, and you get rhino. So it's the head of a spider, the body of a Martian, and the legs of a rhino.
Now, Ronald, I don't want to, you know, obviously this should mostly stand on its own, but what kind of Martian body did you have in your head when you were thinking of this?
Have you ever seen Ghosts of Mars?
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so I'm a major arachnophobe, and the thing that scares me about them specifically is the head.
Oh, no.
But on the other hand, a lot of life is about overcoming your fears and getting into situations that make you uncomfortable. So you know what? I'm going to fuck it.
You know what? This is your one chance to fuck this weird chimera thing. You got to go for it.
Yeah.
I think those rhino legs, you know, they have a lot of support.
Yeah,
I mean, they're generating immense power.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're gonna pick a word to describe rhino legs, it is thick.
Yeah, it is thick. That's a good point. All right, Dan, I think that means you're next.
Oh, no, okay.
You ready?
Yeah, let's go for it.
First, we're rolling for the head, and you get Buzz Lightyear action figures. All right, now we're rolling for the body, and you get a snake. And here's the legs. A human lady.
Oh, hey.
Human lady legs.
Oh, man, now, you lucked out.
Woo.
Yeah, great news if Dan is a leg or ass man.
Hey, you know, who among us doesn't enjoy a long, sinewy, twisting torso? Buzz Lightyear action figure head. Now, would this be a non-animate head, or is it just like it's a living head that has the form of a Buzz Lightyear action figure?
It's got to be inanimate.
I think it's inanimate or animate?
Inanimate, man. Just staring at you with those dead eyes.
Those doll's eyes.
I think it's animate, but maybe it's like Toy Story where they can't move when people are around.
Okay.
That's going to be a problem because Dan is a person.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. We'll work it out because we're going to get married. I mean, it's...
I mean, classic, you gotta go for Buzz. He's a cat.
I mean, because you gotta go for Buzz. You gotta go. Whomst among us hasn't enjoyed a beautiful snake? They're really just tremendous, charming creatures.
So slippery.
And also, I feel like if anyone's gonna use the Mary option, it's gonna have to be for someone with human lady parts of some sort. So I kind of feel honor bound to select marriage.
You'd think that, but it didn't stop Porky, and I don't see why it should stop us.
Well, she maybe had like a lady face.
I mean, maybe she was a distant ancestor of humans. Maybe that was the...
I don't think so, because humans aren't made out of stone.
But
or
why
invisible.
Would its face be of a...
Bones kind of are.
Who the fuck knows, Raul?
Oh, that's the only explanation.
Why did it live underground?
Well, humans live underground?
It's also invisible and can only see if you see it, so it might be like some kind of weird illusion thing.
There's clearly some magic afoot, so I'm not sure if the laws of natural selection apply.
Yeah. ask that person we were talking about before about the neutrino woman spider project.
Yeah,
that they're working on.
Play this episode for him and see what he thinks.
But yeah, I'm putting my money down on Mary. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
All right, Rahul, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. You get the head of a mushroom, the body of an invisible stone underperson, and the legs of a Terminator.
A mushroom head and legs of a Terminator and torso of a... underground person? What is that?
Invisible stone under person. I don't know.
Like,
whatever the
like
thing
from
was
this
in the
episode?
Yeah, so it's got spider legs.
No, but the legs are of Terminator.
Oh, fair enough.
Ooh, so does it have 8 Terminator legs or 2?
That, you know, that's up for interpretation, however you want to do it.
Okay. Yeah.
Man.
Because that would change if I'm horny or not. So
yeah.
Dan has a lot of fetishes that are very, very hard on him.
Dan's a over...
life.
greater than or equal to six kind of man.
What? Dan aspires to sex. Like, he can't. It's like his kinks are very much like goals to achieve and not necessarily day to day.
They're the platonic ideal of kink. They can never exist in our fallen world, but they motivate and inspire us to greatness.
I'm an initiate in a Gnostic order, and I am ascending the levels of reality of kink to reach that platonic center.
Wow. I'm imagining a version of Gnosticism where the way you get back through the Archons is you've mastered their secret sexual hangups and you can fuck them to completion.
I am certain one of those freaks tried that.
All right, well, what did you decide?
Well,
you fucking, you marrying, you killing.
I'm torn between kill and marry.
Yep, that's
aren't we all buddy?
I'm playing the game. Kill, marry, kill, marry.
Every time you meet somebody, you flip a coin to decide what you're gonna do to them.
See, on the one hand, the mushroom head is kind of throwing me. Like,
yeah, it's pretty hot.
It could be too much. It could burn me out, you know, like for life.
Yeah.
Like you're too into it at the start.
It's a little intimidating, frankly. It's sort of like trying to date a supermodel. Like, even if she was into you, there's just, you know, a little bit
now,
of
can I ask what kind of mushroom? Because there are a lot of mushrooms.
The sexiest one you could think of.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be just a mushroom. It could be like a mushroom person kind of deal.
Yeah, like, have you ever seen that Japanese movie, Matango, Attack of the Mushroom People?
What? Of course I've seen it. What a ridiculous question, Lawrence.
That's one of those things I like to call a Lawrence question.
and the weird thing is, it's actually a very sober drama about the impossibility of humans cooperating.
Sounds like a Japanese. It's a sober drama about the Japanese government and the paperwork you have to do.
I mean, you're doing a joke, but that is what Shin Gojira is about.
We watched that. That's why I'm making that joke. I'm going to go with Mary because I feel like there's a lot of... I feel like my social standing in this world would go up if I'm married to Mushroom Head...
Terminator Leg.
Terminator Leg. Stone Torso Person. People will be coming up to me. They'll be like, yeah, so what's it like... You know, and I'll be like, you know, I eat the mushroom. I sold the legs to a company called Cyberdyne.
That doesn't sound like marriage.
Sounds like you've killed her and sold her for parts.
now, gentlemen, I would say that we can bring into this arena the realm of Marxist feminism, and perhaps this does sound a little bit like marriage in the way that the woman is an exploited partner in. I'm sorry, I can't even give a go.
Who said anything about woman?
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Okay. What is a mushroom? Is a mushroom? Do they have genders? Head would.
Fungi have like thousands of genders.
Oh great.
Damn.
Yeah.
You gotta get on this boat. You could have an experience. No, well, I mean, we all could have.
You're not gonna have one of those quotidian experiences like, oh, I don't know, a Buzz Lightyear snake body lady.
Also, when you have time, check the Discord. I have put a picture of one of the mushroom peoples from Mantango in them.
Okay.
That does not look very attractive.
Yeah.
Or Matango. No,
I think marry and then be creative with my partner.
Wow. That's a really creepy thing to say.
Okay, great.
Well, on that note.
Well, this was a terrific game. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
It was a fun one.
Anyways, I guess, Ronald, you want to do one or you not feeling it?
I'll do one real quick. Let's see.
Hey.
All right. I got head of an elephant, body of an elephant, and legs of a bean burrito.
What the fuck?
I am a seven-layer bean burrito.
I mean, that is one of the funniest things Tina Fey has ever said, to my mind.
Yeah, I feel like it's mostly an elephant with bean burrito legs. Not very attractive to me.
I'm not gonna lie. I think that this is too close to being a viable creature, so it's just gonna die horribly.
No, somehow it lives, but you know, Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's just too close to an elephant for me to think about marrying or fucking, so I would just put it out of its misery.
But on the other hand, then you have to kill a noble elephant. Kinda. Although you know I think
it has bean burrito legs. I'm not sure that I can move.
Yeah. It seems like it would be begging for death.
Well,
it's gonna have a hard time being an elephant.
It can move with the magic bean burrito legs.
Would the bean burritos rot after a while?
No, it's part of it.
I mean, eventually when the creature dies, it will rot. Yeah, but not until then.
Like we rot, but
okay, now let me pitch you on something, Ronald. Would you marry the elephant creature if, as part of that, you were allowed to eat its bean burrito legs, which magically grew back every evening?
Ooh.
That seems like torture. That seems worse than killing it.
Ronald was cool with it.
Yeah, no, no.
Then I'm totally in. Yeah, marrying the hell out of that thing. Burritos for life?
I'm very surprised we didn't get more kill answers.
I think we just showed that we are all men with very open hearts.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're all honorable men who are not looking to profit at all.
I think
we're not going to go.
It's because I didn't pick horrifying enough creatures for this. Clearly,
yeah,
that's the problem.
Raul definitely isn't going to sell his bride's legs to Cyberdyne Systems so they can make more Terminators.
She's got 8. She only needs 2.
Look, Terminators don't exist yet. And so Raul's going to get that kickstarted.
Yeah. You know? Judgment Day is inevitable, depending on which Terminator movie you watch.
Once again, I'm asking for your financial support. Little corporation called Cyberdyne.
you know that like thought experiment? I can't remember. It's like, Dan probably knows. I can't remember what it's called. But it's like, if you know that an AI or will exist one day and will take over everything and will be able to look through like all of history and know exactly what everyone felt at all times, and it will torture everyone who didn't support it get ascending and right. reward everyone who did support it, then you have an obligation to either try to stop it so that it never happens or support it now so that when it comes to power you'll be in the good side.
It's called Rococo's Basilisk.
Yeah, there you go. And because I told you all about the basilisk, unfortunately, you're all obligated now. So sorry about that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm too dumb to understand it.
Yeah. How does the basilisk react to just sheer
torture? It airs on the side of torture.
Huh, something it and Rahul have in common.
Damn.
Wait a second. Maybe Rahul is the basilisk. It does sound like something he would do.
Yeah. Well, honestly, except he would lose interest about halfway through and wander off.
I'm not artificial, god damn it. And I have no power and no brains.
You're not artificial.
Sorry, it's not me.
You know, you say you're not artificial, but I put it to you that the basilisk would probably also say it was not artificial when it was trying to trick people. So.
True.
Yeah. Anyways, how about some recommendations and cautions to take this one home? What do you guys think?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yummy yucky or
no. You know, I can't explain yum. I can't explain why, but that phrase makes me angrier than the poop thing. I got so mad at the poop thing.
Well then you're gonna love my recommendation.
God fucking damn. Yeah. Anyways, Dan, would you like to go first?
Sure. Let's see. Well, I have, of course, one recommendation right off the bat. I think everybody who listens to Bad Time Radio would really enjoy this plucky up-and-coming podcast called Thronderdome that I've been doing. And I'm saying this sincerely because this is the first podcast project I've been a part of where I'm also doing the audio editing. Ooh. And so this is the first time I've had to listen to my own work very closely. And
find out just how many times you clear your throat or cough.
How many times I clear my throat, the exact waveform for when I go, mm-hmm. it's all in there. But I have come away really happy with what we've come up with. We were having a ton of fun reading a very corny Star Wars novel with little bits to actually recommend it. And it's fun. I think that's been the most fun part, is the times when you can say, like, you know what? I'm going to hand it to Timothy Zahn. That was pretty cool. But it has been a really good time. And I just wanted to plug it because I'm proud of it.
Oh, yeah. It's great, man.
Nice.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Wow.
You guys already have quite a few episodes out.
Oh, yeah. That weekly schedule is a mother.
It's pretty brutal. We banked a few episodes to begin with, so we had a little more breathing room. And we're going to sort of do a seasons model for each novel. So we're about to wrap up the first novel in the Thrawn trilogy and then take a little break and kind of bank up a few more eps. But yeah, so so there's plenty of content out there ready to sink your teeth into.
That is my next podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I think you'll have a great time. You'll have to let me know what you, if you like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. I have read this trilogy back in the day, so.
Yeah, I think the ideal listener for this podcast is someone like myself who read the trilogy and was very impressed when they were 11 or 12, and has since kind of cooled on Star Wars. So
you're describing my exact experience, so I'm very excited.
Buddy, strap in. You're about to have a good time.
And do you have a caution as well? Is it every podcast that isn't the Thronderdome?
No, of course not, because then that would be cautioning against Bad Time Radio.
And also the Cannonball podcast.
Yeah.
And also the Cannonball. And I would like people to listen to that. Then people can, you know, they can listen to the Cannonball and realize I'm not just spending my time reading books that I think are trash. But I guess as a caution, I would remind everybody, check the state of your tires. You know, it's wintertime. There's a lot of snow, a lot of ice, a lot of rain on the roads. Having good tires with a lot of tread is no laughing matter. It's very serious. Just take a look at your tires. See how close they are to getting down to that wear bar. Just take care of your vehicle, you know, because it'll take care of you when, you know, the road conditions are not ideal. If you make sure you keep it up to speed. So my caution is watch out for bald tires.
Very prudent caution.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go next.
Okay.
So I have two recommendations, no caution. First of all, I knew my boy Dan was going to be on tonight. And in honor of Dan's adopted city, which I believe he loves, albeit in a slightly complicated way, of Birmingham, Alabama, I'm recommending a novel by who I assume is the greatest man from Birmingham to ever live, Robert R. McCammon. This is,
that's our boy.
Yeah, the man, the myth, the guy who had a podcast that Claude sent me and I still haven't listened to about 60 psychedelic music. This is Mine by Robert R. McCammon. It's a weird book because it came out in 1990. And I think that this is where either he lost his cocaine connect or he just decided to try to settle down and write less silly novels. So this is his take on a sort of standard, like Silence of the Lambs or whatever style thriller. In this case, the basic plot is that there are two people who, you know, they were coming up in the 60s. Now it's the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s. And the 60s dream has died. One of them has married a stockbroker and is doing pretty well as a society page journalist and has just had a child. The other one was involved in like a weather underground, but even more extreme sort of cult/political movement and has been doing more acid and steadily going insane. And the insane one gets it into her head that the cult leader of her cult is still alive. And if she can just bring him a baby, he will accept her and fix everything. So she ends up stealing the first woman's baby and they go on this like cross-country chase. It is not as insane as Robert R. McCammon's other work because, again, he was trying to be serious, but he is still an incredible writer, even if the pace is a little bit slower. It's got better character work than the other stuff. He actually like breathes occasionally and like tries to think like, what if this were a real person? How would they think or feel? Which, of course, in his previous novels would have gotten in the way of the vampires eating people. But yeah, I'd still say check it out. Don't go in expecting like his 80s shit, but it's still a very, very able novel. The other one is a book I picked up while I was actually running in Romania and needed something to listen to called Assassinorum Kingmaker by Robert Rath. And you know what, Dan? I'm going to just say, reading trash is fun. And this
book, is fun.
Yeah. This book is very enthusiastic and competently executed Warhammer 40K fiction, which probably means that on the whole, it is trash. It's about a cadre of elite imperial assassins who are sent to an imperial night world to try to figure out who they think has gone traitor, to try to like manage a succession crisis. Now you're like, wait, this is set 40,000 years in the future. Why are you talking about knights? The knights in this case are 30-foot tall, semi-sentient battle suits that a single person controls, and that have the souls of the person's ancestors embedded in them, maybe. And They exist on feudal worlds, and it's really cool because the assassins all have sort of different strengths. There's a Kalidus, a Varnus, and what are the sniper guys called? Vindicar.
Vindicator. No, yeah, Vindicator. Vindicator.
Yeah. And they all have different approaches and are trying to figure out how to work together. And it's really cool seeing all this like dumb courtly intrigue where everyone has a 30-foot tall mech suit. And yeah, it's just a great time. You check it out. And it's pretty well written for what it is too. Yeah. And that's it for me. Ronald, you got something?
I do. All right. I've got two recommendations and one caution today. One of my recommendations can be very quick because I'm not going to really talk about it too much. The first recommendation I have is Skinamarink from 2022. It's a horror movie. It's a very ambitious horror movie, very experimental for something that comes out in theaters. If that sounds like something interesting, if that sounds like something that interests you, don't look up anything else about it. Just go watch it. It's a bit of a tough watch, but if you're into horror and you're trying to push the boundaries of what that is, just go watch Skinamarink. It's really, really good. Okay. And then second off, I have a recommendation and a caution kind of in the same category. I recently was sick a couple weeks ago and I watched a lot of Tom Clancy-esque stuff. And so I pretty much watched all of the Jack Ryan movies. And so first I'm going to recommend a movie that was not very popular, not that well received when it came out, The Sum of All Fears, starring Ben Affleck from 2002. Kind of a stupid movie. It's not completely great, but the premise of the movie is really good. And part of the reason it didn't land is because it came out a year after 9/11, I think. It felt probably exploitative at the time. Now I feel very comfortable watching something about a nuclear attack in the United States. It's not like it's hearkening to a terrorist attack that happened, you know, in the past year or whatever. So I thought that this movie set up like the tension really well and kind of did something that I wasn't expecting because I didn't actually know that much about this movie. So I had a good time with that one. In the same vein, I'm going to caution against the 2014 movie Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, starring Chris Pine. Not a good movie. Not a horrible movie, but it's a competent, you know, action thriller, but not competent enough to really hold your interest. And it doesn't really do anything better than any of the other Jack Ryan movies. I would probably say it's the worst one. Where like probably the best ones are the Harrison Ford ones, maybe, or maybe Hunt for Red October. I don't know. There's a ton of them out there. So, but this is probably the worst one. It's really not that interesting. It really didn't stick with me very well. And I don't think it really stuck with the public zeitgeist either. Like, I don't think anyone really remembers that movie. Just don't bother watching that one. That's it for me.
I am baffled by like Tom Clancy as this weird media property that appears to exist entirely via inertia is strange to me. And then the fact that people keep trying to make Jack Ryan movies, despite the fact that, I mean, Tom Clancy, whatever his strength is, it is not his characters. So it's really weird to like try to build a character based franchise like that. I mean, I know it's not the point is the adventures Jack Ryan's going on, but still there's like James Bond. I can point to things like about James Bond, you know?
Totally.
Jack Ryan's just this weird empty void.
I totally agree with that. The character itself, basically in all of the movies, is like pretty lifeless. Probably Harrison Ford is the only one who actually gives him a little bit of character. But I do think that the general plots of most of them are pretty interesting. And I just kind of miss political thrillers. And those are the, like, these are like the only ones that are still.
It's the closest.
Yeah.
It's the closest you get to one. Yeah.
The '90s had so many good ones. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that genre of movie is just kind of dead, but
I like, it. I mean, what, like slapping Tom Clancy, who was dead by like 10 years when it came out, his name on The Division. And it's like, what, why, you know, who is that for?
Yeah. I assume that it's just like name association with Rainbow Six, but I don't know.
Maybe, but I mean, even I take that back. They have Rainbow Six Siege now. Whatever.
Yeah, I think those are still coming out and they're still fairly popular.
Yeah. But again, I put it to you that it exists entirely just because it's inertia. People kept putting the name on stuff. So now they're just like, well, we put the name on stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially with The Division, I don't think it has anything to do with any of his books.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about it. I played a little bit of the first one, but I don't remember anything from like any of the Tom Clancy novels, which I've only read a couple, but.
The main thing I remember about The Division is that it posits that I believe the Department of Defense has created and sleeper cells of highly trained special forces that are seeded throughout America. And it posits this is a good thing.
So they're doing domestic gladio, but it's really good.
Because they only activate them when the terrorists do terrorism, you see.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, that's okay.
Why are they sleeper cells?
I'm pretty sure in one of the Division games, it was like pretty fucking heinous. They had like the Black Lives Matter symbol as one of the terrorist division symbols.
Oh, God.
And it was just like, Jesus Christ, guys. Like, come on. I cannot believe this.
And to your question of why they're sleeper cells, it's just like, so you're, you know, so that they can keep an eye on things, you know?
You're still a spy, but you're also military, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's fine. They're the good guys. They're shooting the Mad Max-esque gangs that have taken over Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, Rahul, do you have a recommendation and caution?
I have a recommendation. I have no caution.
Hell yeah.
I read the book, The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning. You know, I'm not going to lie. I lost interest about two-thirds of the way through, but...
And this is your recommendation.
it was like a sweet...
Rahul, you are my kind of media experience. I am right there with you, buddy.
See, somebody gets it. But well, yeah,
finish this so I don't have to. That's what you're...
Well, the idea of Swedish death cleaning is that you prepare things. You clean out your place so that it's, like, ready for when you die, so your family doesn't have to deal with so much shit. And I thought that was a good idea.
Is this like just a book about doing that, or is there other stuff?
It's pretty much just that. But I mean,
I assume it's like Marie Kondo, where it's like the philosophy of like getting rid of shit.
It just kind of goes on.
I was kind of hoping it might be like a thriller or something centered around that practice, but no, it's just a guide on
I'll tell you this. In the very beginning, a dude comes to the door and he's like, hello, I'm a Swedish plumber. And kind of goes on from there.
Yeah,
you don't have to do an accent. They don't know who you are.
my other question is, so you're in your 30s.
Yeah.
Very strange to be preparing for your death now, or even thinking about it, really.
I mean, it's about the cleaning aspect of it, you know? Like,
yeah. And this
is about the clutter. There's so much clutter. Like, I have so much shit, and I have no motivation to take care of it.
Hmm.
Like,
did the book help, or did you just read the book?
I mean, you didn't finish the book, so it seems unlikely.
Well, the book.
We don't need to get into my psychology here, all right?
Look, Lawrence, once you've read most of the book, it becomes clutter. You gotta pitch it.
I get the gist, okay. I don't need this anymore.
I think my favorite one of these is Rahul once recommended Catch 22 series, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. He watched the series and liked it, great. And then 3 months later, he cautioned against the series because he hadn't liked the ending.
That's not what it was.
This is a 10-episode series.
They didn't finish the book. They only did like half of it. They didn't fucking finish it. No, and they canceled it halfway through. So I was like, what the fuck?
But my point is that you apparently watched like half the series and then picked it up.
No, I didn't know beforehand. Because why would I think they wouldn't be able to finish the book?
You know? I think Lawrence's point is that you recommended it before you finished it.
Yes.
Yeah, because it started out strong. You know, it did.
This is a series that was out in its entirety. And then you apparently watched 5 episodes, liked it, and then didn't finish it for months.
Oh, yeah.
You're not a finisher.
I'm gonna come on and be all like, hey, have you guys seen this movie Jurassic Park? It's great. It's about this cool theme park where the dinosaurs are real and everyone's having a great time.
Yeah. And then Watch the entire series.
come back the next week. Like, all right, what the fuck?
Yeah. I have a problem finishing things. It's a fact.
Yeah, it's fine. Anyways, plugs. Obviously, the Thronderdome again. Cannonball Podcast. Mm-hmm. Dan, anything else?
Yeah, I'll just stick with my plug-in, checking your tires. But yeah, come on down, see, listen to Thronderdome. I should also say for your listeners, I don't know if I've mentioned it before the times I've talked about it. We're not just a Star Wars recap podcast. We also have a debate segment where I and my co-host Ronnie have a clash of minds over a wide variety of topics, which have so far included seafood, the U.S. remake of The Office, and feathers on dinosaurs, which was a very spirited discussion.
But, like, should we allow it or should we not? You know,
Exactly it. I believe the actual question put forth was, are they stupid?
So it's Star Wars, but also hot takes.
It's Star Wars, but also hot takes where I get to argue some things I believe in and a lot of things I don't believe in.
You know, Ronald, I'm going to... So dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. I don't think it's possible to have a hot take about them.
Let me tell you something, Lawrence. If you keep up with any like dinosaur scientific literature and the particular bones being picked, so to speak... There are absolutely hot takes in dinosaur science.
Real quick, as part of your plug, mm-hmm. Did dinosaurs have feathers?
Yes. Not all of them, but a wide range of them.
So what was the debate? What was the debate? Because that was my understanding. But...
Yeah, my co-host thinks they look stupid and we should stop pretending that dinosaurs had feathers. And I my contention was that facts don't care about your feelings.
Oh, God damn it, dude. I mean, you might be right, but you never, next up you're going to be complaining about how a woman having a wet pussy is just a myth of the lying liberal media. You can't go down that road.
I mean, I've never seen it.
It's actually, if I saw something like that, I would drive my wife to the hospital right away. clearly something has gone wrong.
All right, yeah. Dan, so was Jurassic Park irresponsible for not putting feathers on the dinosaurs?
Nah, it was, so the connection between dinosaurs and birds had been made pretty conclusively by the time that, it's actually one of the reasons why Jurassic Park came out when it did. Is because in the late 60s and early 70s, there was a kind of overturning of the received wisdom called the dinosaur renaissance. I won't talk y'all's ears off about it, but it did sort of blow up a lot of the slow-moving, tail-dragging, cold-blooded, big lizard conception of dinosaurs and demonstrated their close association with, and in fact, of course, birds are a type of dinosaur. Like, you know, this was a lineage that had a lot in common with that type of animal. But there hadn't been a smoking gun. Basically, all of the fossil animals that had been discovered with feather impressions had been pretty clearly birds, until in the 1990s, where there was the discovery of a really remarkable set of sites in China, which were these deposits laid down in lakes next to some volcanic activity. And so every now and then a volcano would blow up and blow gas and ash all over and suffocate all these animals. And then they would die and be washed into these lakes and then preserved in these really, really immaculate fossils that preserved feather impressions. Huh. So there actually was, scientists started getting fossils of, you know, clearly like a dinosaur, non-bird dinosaur animals with feather integument. And since then it's been kind of a question of, cause not all fossil sites are going to preserve that, right? Like, you know, most bones you're going to get will have been like the flesh will all rotted away. The feathers will have blown away, you know? So it's pretty rare to get the actual things on the animal. So the arguments that happen these days are more around which kind of lineages would have had feathered covering, what would have been the nature of that, you know? And there has been evidence of other types of like feather-like structures. Like there's a really well-preserved Psitticosaurus, which was a little Triceratops relative that it looked like a Triceratops, except it was about the size of a dog and didn't have any horns, but it had that parrot beak. And they found one that had these huge, long, like porcupine quills.
Wow.
Coming off of its, like its hindquarters, its hips, and down its tail. So clearly, like a lot of different types of these animals had these, you know, outgrowths, what's called integument in the scientific literature, which just stands for like the outer covering, you know, of an animal, like scales, hair, or feathers. So, yeah. So it's really, so by, but all that to say, Jurassic Park was produced before that smoking gun fossil had been found. And it, what's really cool is that the most feathered dinosaurs that we find are ones related to the Velociraptors. It's a clade called the Dromaeosaurids. Hmm. And they took another look at Velociraptor fossils and found that along the arm bones, you can see raised up bumps, which would have been the attachment points for really big, long, almost like flight feathers.
Wow.
But they weren't able to fly, but they had these feathers on their arms, which is really, really neat. So that's a way that you have evidence for feather covering without actually finding a feather with the fossil.
Now, I'm going to make a point, though, which is that Jurassic Park, although you can't blame it for not having feathers on dinosaurs, you can't absolutely blame it for lying to you about what a Velociraptor is, because those things are clearly either Deinonychus or Utah Raptor, but they just they called them Velociraptor because the name was cooler. Velociraptor.
The name sounds cooler.
Look, you got to understand. They used frog DNA.
And that made the Velociraptor like three times as big as a Velociraptor really was.
Frogs are huge, bro. Have you seen their guts?
frogs are huge. There's one from the Cretaceous of Madagascar called Beelzebufo.
Amazing.
Beelzebub toad, devil toad.
I love it.
And that thing was about the size of a like a chihuahua or a football. I mean, it was like a big damn animal. Yeah.
That's sweet. So I wish I could buy that and like have it delivered to somebody, you know?
It's just a weird threat, I guess.
Like, hey, bro, I bought you a present. It's like a fucking
giant toad.
Hey, frog, I know you got all these flies around here. Shame if something happened to them. Like,
did you think I wanted the flies here?
Bro, real talk. If you presented me with anything but a dog that was the size of a dog, I'm probably interpreting it as a threat.
You're calling a what?
What about a submarine sandwich the size of a dog?
Ooh.
I mean, that would weird me the fuck out.
Also shaped like a dog, and it looks like your dog.
I don't like that.
It's like a balloon animal of submarine sandwiches.
Anyways, so I guess, Rahul, do you have a plug?
I do. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to plug the NecroPants. Have you heard of these?
Yeah. Damn. I have, yes.
You have? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to read it. If you want to make your own NecroPants, I put a link in the Discord. You have to get permission from a living man to use his skin after his death. After he's been buried, you must dig up his body and flay the skin of the corpse in one piece from the waist down.
Jesus Christ!
As soon as you step into the pants, it will stick to your own skin. The coin must be stolen from a poor widow and placed in the scrotum along with a magical sign. I can't read Icelandic. Written on a piece of paper. Consequently, the coin will draw money into the scrotum, so it will never be empty as long as the original coin is not removed.
Oh! Sorry.
To ensure salvation, the owner has to convince someone else to overtake the pants and step into each leg as soon as he gets out of it.
Wait, so these pants... Wait, so you go through all this effort to get these pants, and then they suck.
They're basically a curse.
Yeah.
They make you rich, though!
Kind of. They put coins in your ball sack. Like,
no.
You save the corpse's ball sack. I can't stress that enough. If you look at these pants, they have a penis.
That still does not seem like an enormous amount of money.
How many?
A
how
gold
many times?
Coin new? That's worth that's so much.
They didn't say
how
gold.
How many times have you? Well, I mean, you pulled up to like. How many times have you pulled up to the parking meter and you're like, damn. The quarter.
Are you allowed to pull down the pants to go
this
to the bathroom?
Solves, this solves this problem.
Anyways, I we should probably wrap up soon, but I would urge you guys to scroll down to the milk-sucking demon, which is one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen in my life.
What is that?
It's a milk-sucking demon, Ronald. What don't you get?
I love that we've gotten to the part of the show where we just upset each other with huge frogs. And
this is just our group chat in audio form.
Dude. Apparently, people create them to make butter or to amass butter. So it's the same idea as the pants, but instead of coins, it's butter.
And you have to make them by stealing a grave rob for it. Man, Icelandic people love grave robbing, apparently.
They use every part of the body.
Yeah.
Oh, anyways, man, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it.